Good morning, Monday, 23 October 2023, 10/23/23. I'm Herb Morgan, Senior Managing Director, Chief Investment Officer of Cantor Managed ETF Portfolios. As a reminder, if I have something to say intra week, we'll put it up on the Twitter or the X, I guess, or on LinkedIn or both. As a reminder, the presentation has been prepared by us, Cantor Fitzgerald Investment Advisors, for use with investors and financial advisors, each of whom are expected to make their own investment decisions. Nothing contained in the presentation should be treated as investment advice. No recommendations for the purchase or sale of any securities. This is purely for informational purposes. The accuracy, adequacy, or completeness cannot be guaranteed. Another day, we read across the board, pretty much across the board. You can see here the S&P 500 down a little bit more than 2% last week. And this is really as interest rates have finally gone higher outside of the very, very short-term interest rate that's set by the Federal Open Market Committee. That's the Fed funds rate. When the Fed raises or lowers the Fed funds rate, it hopes to influence the longer term rates, something like the 10-year treasury yield. Much of business borrowing costs, whether it's in the public bond markets or through banks, much of it is based off of the 10-year US treasury rate. And while the Fed was raising that very short term rate that it controls, the market wasn't raising the yield on the 10-year treasury. They say that monetary policy, that's the actions of the Federal Reserve, works with a lag. So here we are a couple of years into the Fed raising interest rates. And now finally, the rest of the curve, the yield curve, 10-year yield, the 20-year yield, et cetera, have gone up as well. What does that mean? Well, it means that what they're doing to try to slow the economy, to try to remove the inflationary pressures within the economy, it means those things are starting to happen. That's that variable and long lag that the economist Milton Friedman talked about so long ago, and every economist still talks about, including Jerome Powell, the chairman of the Fed, who's not actually an economist. But anyway, we're seeing that now. The 20-year plus treasury bond index was down more than double, what the S&P 500 was down last week. It was down almost 5%. Okay. Is that a big deal? Should I be doing anything? We're going to get to that towards the end of the deck here. First, let's quickly go over some of the economic data that we got last week. Start with New York State or Empire State Manufacturing. It stayed in contraction, came to minus 4.6. Estimate was minus 6.0. New orders are in contraction. This is a manufacturing industrial kind of survey. Outlook for new orders and shipments, though, was somewhat positive, remained there. Employment continued to rise. So what we really see here is, we had this kind of big period up, 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 up. We had the recession, the COVID, the huge surge coming out of COVID. And then after that, back to a more variable reading from New York State Manufacturing. I will say, though, on balance, it's been negative. What's not negative, though, is retail sales. September retail sales expected to be up 0.3, skyrocketed up 0.7%. Part of the reason the bond market continued to sell off, what do you mean? That's good news. Well, if it's good news, then the inflationary pressure is not coming out of the economy as much as hoped, and therefore the Fed could stay higher for longer with the current interest rate level, or perhaps even raise them further. Though I don't think that will be the case, but that is how the market interpreted this last week. Moving on to industrial production and capacity utilization for September. Industrial production was expected to be flat. It was actually up 0.3%. You can see it on the right-hand side there, that little tiny blue bar. Okay, fine. Capacity utilization up from 79.5 to 79.7. Below 80, that's sort of price neutral in terms of its inflation implications, because inflation is something we're all concerned and talking about right now. Above 80, that's sort of inflationary, and it's always been thought of as such. So we've been now consistently below that 80 for the better part of 2 years. And of course, we've seen inflationary data trend down. It's not to target yet, but it's definitely trending down since the Fed started raising interest rates. Business inventory shot up last month. So this is one where you kind of, you can't look at it in a vacuum. If inventories are going up, is that because we're not selling things out the back end? Or are business inventories going up because we are selling so much out the back end that businesses are confident and they're investing in higher inventories? Higher inventories is a big contributor to GDP, and drawdowns in inventories can be a subtraction from GDP because CEOs, businesses want to get lean when they see recessionary clouds on the horizon. In August, business inventories were up 0.4%. So what was it? Was it no sales? Well, we just saw retail sales were very good. Or was it confidence? Should it be looked at as a positive or a negative? Well, for that, we look at the inventory to sales ratio. The inventory to sales ratio had been going up, meaning inventories were climbing, and now it's starting to come down while they're building inventories. So the reality is, this is another positive indicator of economic activity and economic strength, and therefore suggesting, again, the Fed could keep these rates at this higher level for a little bit longer time to get that inflation, give it the time to moderate as we want it to do. Okay, moving on. Home building sentiment. Now, one industry, probably the most elastic industry, the tip of the spear industry, is housing. Housing is highly dependent on interest rates. Home builders, particularly the smaller ones, tend to use debt to finance the home construction, right? Construction loans, we call them. And they do that. They use that debt. And then, of course, the home buyers have to finance the home purchases with mortgages. So home industry, the National Association of Home Builders Housing Market Sentiment Index, has been declining, came in October at 40. The line of delineation is 50 between happiness and not happy. So 1, 2, 3 consecutive months below 50. We know why. It is interest rates, not so much demand. There's still pretty strong demand. The percentage of home buyers paying all cash has been rising. And they're finding alternative sources, but homes are still selling, not in the volume of it as they would have in the past, but there's also a lack of inventory, so it's keeping prices generally high. Housing starts gained 7% in September after a big drop in August. Building permits fell 4.4%. Okay, moving on. So the Fed, Federal Reserve, the Federal Open Market Committee, has essentially three jobs. First and foremost, to be the bank to the banks, to be the lender of last resort, so that we don't get a Jimmy Stewart Wonderful Life situation where people want their money out of the bank. The bank says, I can't give it to you because I lent it out to businesses and home buyers, right? So what the Fed can do, what the banks can do, is they can take those loans, pledge them as collateral to the Federal Reserve. Federal Reserve gives them cash with which they could meet those withdrawal requests at their bank. That's always been the job of the Federal Reserve. Then, about 40 years ago, the Fed got another job, two actually. They said, hey, we've had this big bout with inflation, so we want you to use tools, interest rates, open market purchases, open market sales, to try to maintain price stability. Well, price stability, how do you define that? Recently, only two Fed chairs ago, did we define that. It was the parting gift of Ben Bernanke. So we're going to define price stability as 2% core PCE inflation. Third, and co-equal with price stability, is full employment. This is important because if the Fed were raising interest rates and slowing the economy, we would begin to see initial claims for unemployment rise. And within a population of 335 million people, having less than 200,000 filings per week for unemployment is incredibly low. So even though we've had all these interest rate increases, even though we've had bank failures, think about, you know, earlier this year, even though banks are pulling back on their ability to lend, we haven't seen a slowdown in hiring and we haven't seen an increase in jobless claims. Therefore, another argument that the Fed can use to keep rates higher for longer. But in addition to that, having these higher rates, the Fed now has basically more ammunition. When the economy does start to slow, and of course it will, the Fed can cut interest rates. When interest rates were at zero, we were afraid, what would they do if the economy slowed? Well, now that we're at a 5.5% federal funds rate, there's plenty of room for the Fed to cut. And of course, weekly continuing claims at 1.7 is a very low number and sign of a healthy job market. So the Fed's all clear. They're not worried about banks going under as much as we were, say, in March. That was just a few regional banks. We're not worried about the labor market. We're only worried about inflation. We're singularly focused. So let's use the tool we have, the federal funds rate, and number two, the balance sheet. We've already deprinted or shredded $1 trillion since the Fed began this fight against inflation. Fortunately, the economy has not rolled over. There are a lot of signs that it might. We're going to continue to talk about those. Let's start with Philly Fed. That's similar to that New York State survey I showed you. That rose from minus 13 to minus 9. Again, that is a contractionary indicator, so not particularly good. New orders, though, turned positive. Employment turned positive. The outlook stayed positive, but fell slightly. Back to real estate for a second. Existing home sales, as I mentioned, they continue to go down, down, down. The annualized pace back 3 years ago was over 6.5 million annualized, and we're now under 4 million annualized. That's quite a drop off. It's down almost 20% from a year ago. Okay, so what's going on out there? Should we be worried? I will put something in the commentary each week in addition to the economic data, but I put something in there that's based on the preponderance of the calls and questions and emails we get during the week. And as you can imagine, with the stock market being down last week, and the bond market being down last week, a number of calls were, hey, am I losing money? Should I sell? Should I get out? My bond ETFs are declining in market price. I'm scared. And let's just step back for a second. I'm going to start with something called the 3 month to 10 year treasury spread. You take the yield on the 3 month treasury bill, or excuse me, the 10 year treasury bill, and you subtract that of the 3 month. Normally you get paid more for owning a 10 year bond than you would for a 3 month bill. By getting paid more, that ratio is positive. And throughout time, most of the time it is positive. However, sometimes when the Fed is raising short-term rates so much, i.e. 5.5% Fed funds rate, when they're raising it so much and the 10 year yield hasn't gone higher yet, it's actually lower than the three-month T-bill. We call that inversion. When inversion happens, this line goes below zero. And it historically precedes one of these big red bars. These are recessions. So got down there, started to come back, recession. Got down there, started to come back, recession. Got down there, started to come back, recession. Three yield curve inversions. Three recessions. Fourth yield curve inversion, and much bigger than the other three, that yield curve inversion is starting to go away. Why? Not because we're lowering the rate on the Fed funds rate, which would translate to the T-bill, but because yields on the 10-year treasury are going up naturally. The market forces are taking those yields higher. And that's typically what happens right before a recession sets in. And there are many indicators to suggest we might get a recession. I thought we were going to get them one back in March. We didn't. It still could come. It still could come in the latter part of next year. But there's so many other indicators that argue just the opposite. So for now, we're going to withhold judgment on this recession. And we're going to focus on some other things like earnings. And whether or not we have recessions also is often not that relevant to our long-term investment process and our themes. So the biggest question I got last week was, hey, the S&P's down, the bond market's down, I'm losing money. I don't like to lose money. Well, let's talk about that. Here's the S&P 500, goes back a couple of years. We started our firm in 2004. Many of you have been invested with us since 2004, and you've seen many drops like this. If you had invested only on the highest point here back in July, recent high. And if you had sold Friday near the close, then you would have lost 7.95. Ask yourself, have I been investing for 20 years, 10 years, 30 years, 40 years, all along the way? Or did I only invest at this one point? And did I sell? You don't lose money until you sell. Volatility, movement in prices, or what somebody else is willing to pay you for your investment changes all the time. I always say that nervous energy is a great destroyer of wealth. It's critically important if you're going to achieve success as an investor that you don't let the price of something dictate your action, right? If you need to sell, you sell for a reason. You need to buy something. You need to make an investment. You're changing your strategy, whatever that is. But just because the price is down 8% is meaningless. It just means that the buyers who were bidding it up all along, there are fewer of them. Okay. And what about the bond market? The U.S. aggregate bond index also down. It's down about 7%. But again, it's just from a recent high. So did you make your one and only investment in bonds in March of this year? And did you sell it here on Friday and you're down about 7%? Are you really losing money? Or is this just part of the process of investing? For most of us, we get out of college or we get out of high school and we go to work. And at some point, a 401k is offered to us and we begin to invest. And we have other things that happen along the way in our life. We gain capital, we gain wealth, and we make investments. But investments should be made with a 5, 10, 20, 30-year horizon. And by the way, we don't sell our investments on one day. We get to the point where we are retired and we begin to live off our investments. Essentially, we harvest them. We don't sell them. Why would we sell our investments because we retired? Just the opposite. The way we accumulated was planting seeds over and over and over for many, many years at different prices, at different economies, different state of geopolitical affairs. And we get to the point now where we're retired, if we are, and we begin to harvest. Well, maybe we sold a couple of shares at this low point because that was our monthly plan, but that's okay. So back to that question, am I losing money? Ask yourself this question. If you're feeling angst, and it's normal, right? It's natural human emotion. You see, you logged in or you looked at a statement and you saw a value, and you log in a month later or a week later and the value's lower, you begin to extrapolate like that will always be the case. But if you go back and look at your own investment history and you look at history going back to whenever you started investing or became an adult, you will see that over time, you make lows, you turn around, you make highs. We've been through the global financial crisis. We've been through many wars. We've been through many economic changes, recessions, geopolitical crises, all kinds of things. And capitalism has survived and thrived. It evolves and it gets better. Ask yourself this question. Did I make my one and only investment at that high that I'm referring to in my brain when I think I've, quote, lost money? Did you then subsequently sell? Well, if you didn't buy high and sell low, you haven't lost money. Now, if you bought low and sell high, you made money, but then you got to pay tax on that in a taxable account. My view is you invest consistently over long periods of time. So I'm guessing for most of you, you didn't buy at that recent high, you didn't sell at this recent low, but I sure did get a lot of calls last week with the question. And the question is, am I losing money? I need to stop. We had folks with treasury bonds, right? The only guaranteed, truly guaranteed investment in the world. I realize there are bank guarantees and there are insurance company guarantees. But the U.S. Treasury is truly an unlimited guarantee. It's backed by the full faith and credit of the United States government. So people whose the price of a treasury bond they bought, maybe with a 20-year maturity, certainly gone down. It only matters if you're selling it, okay? Investments are made and accumulated over a lifetime, not based on the high in March and the low yesterday or maybe next week. Investments are meant to be accumulated. The drops or the pull downs are the opportunity to to enhance returns if you believe that markets will recover as they have in every other drop in history. The problem is our own biology. We're programmed to fight or flight. And if we lack maybe the knowledge, the experience, or the ability to check our emotions and be dispassionate about what's happening in a market downturn, we feel we have to fight. We have to have some action. And the only action that we can think of is, should I sell something? Well, throughout my period as an investment manager, that has been a mistake. Why? Because in the end, stock markets have in the past always recovered from drawdowns and always come back to new highs. They tend to do it rather quickly. And I never thought I needed my wealth, all of it, to spend on October 25th, 2023. I need it to be there for me in retirement so that every month when I'm retired, I can harvest both the income and maybe some shares, hopefully selling them at a profit, but just a little tiny bit each month so that I can live and be active and enjoy my retirement. I hope you all think the same way as well. Throughout history, that flight mentality, i.e. hitting that sell button, has been the wrong move. So then people ask me, like, well, should I invest now? And my answer is yes, probably. Now, each person's situation is different. I always tell people to get rid of things like debt, especially high cost debt first, and you know, all those things. Talk to your financial advisor. But forward estimates for returns of stocks and bonds are getting better by the day. Take a look at this chart here. This is the U.S. aggregate bond index yield. This covers the vast majority of the bonds available in this country. You can see back at the end of 2020, just less than 3 years ago, the yield on this index was 1.74%. Well, since most corporate bonds are issued in maturities of no more than 10 years, it's a pretty good indicator of what we could expect returns to be in the forward 10 years. Not very much, but inflation expectations back then were zero. And the Fed was in the bond market. Remember, they're printing money by buying bonds, driving the prices higher. We had this violent intervention in the marketplace. Well, now the violent intervention is out of the marketplace. And the yield on the U.S. aggregate bond index is 6.37%. And we think inflation is on its way back to 2%. So a real return of 4.37%. The return expectations for bonds are higher than they've been since early 2009. So why would I want to leave when the return expectations are getting good? To me, this looks like a good time to invest. Could the return expectations go higher? Maybe, but they only went higher back here at the peak of the world financial crisis, where there was absolutely no liquidity, complete collapse of the world banking system. So that seems unlikely to me. It seems that this is the opportunity to invest. And it makes a balanced fund, the traditional classic 60-40 portfolio, it makes it look really, really attractive. Well, that's the bond side, or the 40%. Depends on your own situation, of course. What about the stock side, the 60%? Well, to there, we look at the inverse of the price earnings ratio. It's the earnings to price ratio. The earnings divided by the price is called the earnings yield. Well, bottom of the market, global financial crisis, is at 6.74. It's just coincidental. I don't know why. Same as that of the ag, right? 6.74% March 20th, 2020. Can you think of a better time to have bought stocks? We had a huge rally, right? We had a huge rally in stocks, and the earnings yield went down, 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 down. It got cut in half, less than in half, down to 3%. Well, now the earnings yield is 4.8. Well, the earnings yield goes up every time the stock market goes down. So you say, well, it could be because we're headed into a recession and earnings are going down. That's true. It's not like a bond where the interest payment is fixed. And you just showed me I get 6% plus on corporate bonds, and stocks are a lot more risky. I should get paid more for stocks. Therefore, they should be valued lower. So there's more downside risk in stocks, and it's a pretty good argument. But what about when we get to a 10-year return and we remember that investing is a process that takes place over many, many years? The willingness of an investor to want to sell to try to time the market seems dangerous to me. And then we look at the S&P 500 itself, and we look at the blended forward 12-month earning estimates. We're in the middle of earnings season, and as earnings come out, the analysts then update their estimates for the future. And since we started about a week or two ago, earnings estimates have gone higher for the forward 12 months. In fact, $238.12 is the highest forward estimated earnings for the S&P 500 we've ever had. So there's that. And we also know that over time, earnings tend to go higher for the S&P 500. Doesn't mean they can't go down. Sometimes they go down, right? Here's the recession associated with COVID. You close down all the world's economic capacity, earnings will go down. No question about it. Assets will be impaired. No question about it. But look at this beautiful response and this rebound. Then we had a little bit of a drop. And now earnings estimates are on the rise again. So should we be panicked now or should we be greedy now? Okay, rest of this week, nothing today. We've got manufacturing and services PMIs on Tuesday, both expected to be below 50. That's negative. New home sales estimated at an annualized pace of 684 on Wednesday. Jobless claims estimated about 200,000. Third quarter GDP, yeah, that's not a typo. GDP has been accelerating. Pending home sales, durable goods, personal income spending, and the big one, core PCE and the PCE price index will be Friday at 3/10. That's down from 4/10. That's on a month over month basis. That annualizes still well above the Fed's target of 2. And then, of course, consumer sentiment. Thanks, everybody. A little bit longer than usual this week. Hope you enjoyed it. Talk to you soon.